Welcome to Rings of Power Reactions. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. Here you'll find reviews, reactions, and deep dives into the lore behind Amazon Prime's Rings of Power. To go deeper, come wander with me on my main podcast, Lore of the Rings. Visit ringspodcast.com or find Lore of the Rings on your favorite podcast player. Now, let's wander Rings of Power. I know you are a big fan of Lord of the Rings, just as I am. So I have something special to share with you. Imagine carrying a piece of Middle-earth with you right on your finger. Well, now you can, thanks to the incredible Lord of the Rings collection from Manly Bands. These aren't just any rings. These are officially licensed, meticulously crafted rings inspired by the legendary world of J.R.R. Tolkien. Whether you're channeling the wisdom of Gandalf, the elegance of Legolas, or even the mystique of the One Ring itself, there's a design in this collection that's perfect for you. On my finger right now is my personal favorite, the sleek Aragorn ring. For you, my fellow wanderer, I have something special. 25% off your entire Manly Bands order. Visit ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar at the top. There you'll find an exclusive link and code that gets you 25% off your entire order. So whether you're in the market for a wedding band, a statement piece, or just something cool to show off your love for Middle-earth, don't miss out on this exclusive deal. Again, visit ringspodcast.com, tap the gold bar, and save that 25%. These rings are as timeless as the tales they represent, so order yours today. Rings of Power is back. Today I'm breaking down the good, the bad, the lore faithfulness, and all the little Easter egg connections in Episode 1 of Season 2. Titled Elven Kings Under the Sky. From light to darkness, good to bad, we'll explore it all. Plus, I've got a few spots where ChatGPT could have given the screenwriters a hand. Stick around to the end to hear my scoring on this episode. It may surprise you. If you haven't seen it yet and you don't want any spoilers, then go watch it and come back. And if you need a subscription for Amazon Prime Video, where you can watch Rings of Power, head to ringspodcast.com/prime and start your free trial today. This is episode number 172 of Lore of the Rings. I'm Aaron, your guide to wandering Middle-earth. Before we get going, a huge thank you to all of you who joined me in the live stream watch party of episode 1. We had a lot of fun watching Rings of Power together, chatting about our favorite characters, and sharing some cool connections. Now, let's wander. Let's start with a synopsis of this episode. It's titled Elven Kings Under the Sky, as I said before. Sauron's Second Age story is revealed, and he comes back as Halbrand. Nori and the Stranger continue their search for the Land of Rune in the Far East and are met by a friend. The Three Rings have been created, but Elrond warns against their use. However, Lord Círdan is convinced, and the Three Rings heal the Tree of Linden. Alright, let's start with the title, Elven Kings Under the Sky. This line is word for word from the Ring verse that is printed at the beginning of every single Lord of the Rings book. It describes the recipients of the three elven rings. And if you'd like a deeper dive into the ringverse, then go check out Lore of the Rings episode number 138 at ringspodcast.com/138. So the prologue of season 1 of Rings of Power began with light. We saw the two trees of Valinor, we saw Galadriel in Valinor. But the prologue for season 2 begins in darkness. It specifically begins with the Iron Crown of Morgoth as it comes out from the darkness. Now this crown has some history. Morgoth was Sauron's master in the First Age of Middle-earth. He was the big baddie, and he actually stole the three Silmarils from Feanor and the elves, and he put them into this crown of iron. We read in the Silmarillion, quote, "In Angband, Morgoth forged for himself a great crown of iron, and he called himself King of the World. In token of this, he set the Silmarils in his crown." So as this crown emerges from the darkness, it's coming towards Sauron. This is the crown, presumably, that held the three Silmarils of light. Now those Silmarils are no longer there. They've been reclaimed, and so the crown is now just really a crown of iron. There are no Silmarils, there is no light in that particular crown. This scene that we see at the dawn of the Second Age is a Rings of Power invention, as far as I know. In the Silmarillion, it reads a little bit differently. Quote, "When Thangorodrim was broken and Morgoth overthrown, Sauron put on his fair hue again and did obeisance to Eonwe." Eonwe was the representative of the Valar at that time. "And abjured all his evil deeds. And some hold that this was not at first falsely done, but that Sauron in truth repented, if only out of fear, being dismayed by the fall of Morgoth, and the great wrath of the Lords of the West. Those would be the Valar. Sauron, however, does not return to Valinor to face judgment among the Valar. He does stay in Middle-earth. How long did he actually have this moment of repentance and humility? We're not exactly sure. We know it was about 500 years into the Second Age where he again revealed himself. And so this scene from Rings of Power is probably an invention of Rings of Power. Sauron does share his vision of what he wants to accomplish. Quote, bring its people together to rule them as one. A few moments ago, I referenced the Ringverse as the inspiration for the title of this Rings of Power episode. I see and hear what Sauron is saying, that it echoes a lot of the language that we also see in the Ringverse, which says, quote, one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. So Sauron here is seeking to rule over all of Middle-earth. He wants order, he wants to bring healing, so he says, to the chaos, and he wants it to be ordered under his will, under his dominion. And that is exactly the power that he is seeking for. They articulate it here as power not of the flesh, but over flesh. I'm not particularly excited about that description, and I'll get into that in just a few moments. But at this point, the orcs decide, sure, yeah, we're going to follow Sauron. Sauron kneels before Adar to receive the Iron Crown, and this is an important moment in the episode. However, Adar betrays Sauron, and instead of crowning him with the Iron Crown, he flips it over and stabs him in the back, and all of Adar's orcs jump in, and they essentially kill Sauron's body. However, Sauron is a shapeshifter, and he can remove his spirit from his body and change different forms as he would like. And in fact, I found it really striking when he kind of has that scream and the big light explosion kind of turns everything into ice and snow. I found that was really, really striking. Adar and his orcs start to awaken from the frozen explosion, I guess. Adar proclaims to the orcs, you are free now, my children. And he actually leaves the crown behind. He doesn't put his own crown onto his head. He seeks to have a new way, a new relationship of leading the orcs. But Sauron's body is gone. He's turned into black goo, which seeps down into the very bottom of the cave. Time passes. I really do like how they show the passage of time with the stalagmites growing up and taller. As the Sauron mud consumes life, it seems to get strength. It takes it from the rat and from the bug, the centipede, and then eventually from a woman. This is a Rings of Power invention, the black Sauron goo thing. From all the life that he consumes, Sauron is able to regain some form, and he comes back as Halbrand. So that's where we get Halbrand, his origin story. He's traveling back to Mordor, back to the Southlands. He comes across a group of people, starts talking with them for a second, and talks with that man about a grim reminder. The man wears that token of heraldry, as he says, to remind him that, quote, fortunes can turn, even for the most powerful. It could be a grim one or a hopeful one, but this seems to be Sauron's choice in this particular season. This is his story. Is his fortune going to turn? He is one of the most powerful. Is his fortune going to turn to grimness and darkness, or is this a hopeful warning that he can turn to goodness and light? Another thing that I'm hearing here, and I noticed this a lot as I was rewatching season one, the writers like to use this phrase, they say, or it is said. To their credit, Tolkien would also use this phrase as, you know, it is said, or this legend, this, that, and the other, but they use it so much in Rings of Power, it becomes, every time you hear it again, it's like, oh, well, who says? How did you hear that? How do you know that? And in fact, I really would like to know, because these people of the Southlands, at this point in the Second Age, they probably know very little about the people of Numenor. Numenor, if we're following the lore, had various little settlements out into Middle-earth, but how much did these people actually know of Numenor or the land beyond the sea? Not exactly sure. But we do hear what Sauron's main choice for this particular season is going to be. What is his story going to be? Is he going to find another life and choose good, or is he going to continue on the paths that he has been, chasing death? That seems to be the primary choice set in front of Sauron, and we'll get to see as Sauron slash Halbrand takes his journey in this season, which does he choose? Does he choose a new life of good, or does he continue down and chase death? And seemingly, he seems to choose good here at the beginning. He follows these people out onto the boat, trying to find a new life. His mentor even tells him, that you need to choose good every single day until it becomes part of your nature. This reminds me of what Elrond said in the Council of Elrond in the Fellowship of the Ring, that, quote, nothing is evil in the beginning. Even Sauron was not so. So even Sauron can have some good within his nature if he continues to make good choices and live by that every single day. That line was also said by Galadriel in Season 1, Episode 1, that nothing is evil in the beginning. Halbrand seems to also have some sort of a mental connection with the sea worms, the sea monsters in the ocean. He can sense that they're coming, and one is coming right at him, and he kind of has this mental power to kind of defuse it. However, we see that Halbrand is not going to choose good every single time, as he essentially leaves his guide to die on the boat, but he takes the heraldry, he takes the symbolism of kings, but he leaves the man to die. My daughter saw that, and she's like, oh man, Sauron, he's bad. That's just rude. Later on, we find Halbrand on the raft. We hear Galadriel calling from Episode 2 of Season 1. She swims to the boat. Halbrand says that famous line, "The tides of fate are flowing. Yours may be heading in or out." This line actually came from Galadriel to Frodo in the Fellowship of the Ring book, as she says, "The tides of fate are flowing." So that about wraps it up for the prologue. I think this was a pretty good prologue. We get a pretty clear indication of who the main character is, what the main primary conflict is. We kind of have all of that set up. We're going to be following Sauron's journey. Does he choose good? Does he repent and choose the ways of light? Or does he choose the way of darkness and, as his mentor said, continue to chase death? Very different from the opening prologue of Season 1, which really began with a lot of light. And even then, the conflict there was not exactly clear what the conflict was from Season 1, from the opening prologue. So I do think that this prologue for Season 2 is a lot clearer on that. All right, so let's switch back to Elrond and the Rings in that particular storyline. We find Elrond and Galadriel as they are racing on horseback from Eregion to Lindon. Elrond has the three rings in his pouch, and he seems very adamant that Galadriel not get them. There's a really great musical cue at about the 23-minute mark.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide. Elrond and Galadriel racing on their horses. This is the first time that you see a shot of Galadriel and Elrond's face. And with each one that shows up visually, the music reminds you of who that character is. When we see Galadriel's face, we also hear a small recap of her musical theme. It's really short. It's really fast. But then it transitions right into Elrond's theme. The da-da-da-da-da. Forgive me, I'm not a great singer. But you can see Galadriel's musical theme shifts right into Elrond's theme. It takes less than 2 seconds, but it is just an incredibly subtle yet powerful reminder about everything we know about these two characters. I do see some connections here in this chase. Galadriel says to Elrond, she says, "Give them to me," about the rings. I hear an echo in that of Boromir to Frodo before the fellowship breaks up, and Boromir says to Frodo, "Give it to me! Give me the ring." I think there's some echoes there. But again, what I really like here is we do see the clear conflict that the elves are fading. They're going to have to leave Middle-earth. Gil-galad's going to have to tell his people to pack up and leave. And yet, Galadriel has some new news for them. Sauron is back. They know who he is. They know what he's doing. Their greatest foe is rising. Gil-galad wants to use the rings. Galadriel wants to use the rings, but Elrond does not feel like they should. So some character internal conflict there. I will say that this discussion had some really terrible lines of dialogue. For example, Gil-galad says to Elrond, quote, "That decision is far above your privilege." I mean, come on. "The best we can do is, that is above your pay grade." I think we could do a lot better. So I actually asked ChatGPT to match Tolkien's voice and writing style to convey this same idea. I really love these alternatives. Let me know what you think. Number one, "It is not for you, Elrond, to weigh this choice. Such matters lie beyond your station and concern the very fate of our people." Okay, it's unique, but still a little bit like the "it's above your pay grade" kind of a talk. All right, ChatGPT number two. "This is a burden not yours to bear, Elrond. The weight of this decision rests with those whom the Valar have appointed." I really like this one. Good callback to the lore. Number three. "Elrond, son of Eärendil, This is a council for kings and not for those who serve them, however wise they may be. Ah, man, I really love this one. It calls on the lore, and it is a subtle jab at Elrond being half-elven, yet still compliments him in a way. So alternatives to that line took me about 2 minutes to come up with, and I'm not even like a trained or experienced screenwriter. So it just blows me away sometimes at how lazy some of these lines of dialogue seem to be. However, I will say the visuals of that line also tell a really compelling message. Gil-galad steps over and the camera swings so that both Gil-galad and Galadriel are in the shot as Gil-galad pulls rank. Both of them, Gil-galad and Galadriel, come from higher houses of elves than Elrond does, and because of that, they're considered more noble. Elrond's elven heritage is from the line of the Teleri, the third house of elves, whereas Gil-galad and Galadriel are of the Noldor, the second house of the elves, and the most prestigious, at least in Middle-earth. So while the line may have been lazy, the visual communication was spot on. However, Elrond is resolved not to hand the rings over, and he ends up doing something really risky, jumping over a waterfall. Now, I was actually really surprised. Elrond seems to be getting a lot braver and a lot spunkier here in Season 2. But knowing what we know about Galadriel from Season 1, why didn't she jump over the waterfall after him? I would have really expected that from her character. So maybe are we starting to see some changes in Galadriel's character? Perhaps. We are now back in Mordor, and Halbrand is back in chains. I don't know what to say about this. At the end of Season 1, he walks back into Mordor. He's got this great noble cloak on him. He's got that smirk. He's like, yes, man, I am back in my power. This is my house, baby. Now, all of a sudden, he just went back to Mordor just to get into chains. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Halbrand wants to negotiate with Adar. And the first thing that Halbrand says to Adar, let my people go. Now, I heard that and I laughed out loud because I was like, okay, Halbrand, what are you, supposed to be like Moses or something? I don't know if they're trying to set up Halbrand as a Moses-like figure from the Old Testament, but we could probably come up with something else that's not so Moses-like. Something like, release my people from your thrall, or withdraw your foul hand from my people. Yes, I did use ChatGPT to come up with those as well, but I'm just saying, it's not that hard to come up with some really good Tolkien-like lines beyond just, let my people go. Let my people go. In any case, Adar also uses a phrase to refer to Numenor that we've heard before. This is the second time in this episode. He calls it the men beyond the sea. This is a reference to Numenor, which really was that land beyond the sea for all intents and purposes for the people of Middle-earth. But Halbrand also gives here the best explanation I've heard so far of what it means to have a power over flesh. He says, quote, a power that will allow him to use your children as slaves in his army once more. So this makes more sense when you look at the powers of the One Ring, to subjugate all life to Sauron's will and have him dominate over all life. Perhaps this is too cheesy, or maybe I just don't like the word flesh, but an alternative antithesis for this power could have been not a power of the mind, but over minds, or not a power of wills, but over wills. I don't know. I told you I'm not a screenwriter. Adar really believes that Sauron is dead, even though Halbrand is speaking in double meaning when he says, you can't kill me. Now we follow up with the stranger Inori in the east as they're trying to get to the land of Rune and find those strange stars. They're walking along, the stranger has had a dream, and the next morning Inori says to him, you got that look in your eye. Well, maybe it's just me, but when Inori said that, my brain immediately kicked into, I don't even know what that popular song is on the radio nowadays. You got that look in your eye. Do, 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 do. Yeah, you didn't know I was going to sing today, but heads up, I'm singing. Okay, yeah, I'm a nerd, I get it. But I kind of have this thing right now of looking at these lines and thinking, how do we tweak these lines so that they sound and feel more like Tolkien's world and less like our world? So instead of, you got that look in your eye, how might an uneducated hobbit say that? How about, you've got that far-off look again, like you're chasing thoughts you can't quite catch. Or how about this one? You're wearing that face again, like you've seen something in your sleep that won't leave you be. I think those sound a lot more like Samwise Gamgee than, you know, just somebody in our world saying, hey, you know, you got that look in your eye again. The stranger and Nori are being watched by some strange people in a bronze mask. I don't exactly know who these people will be, more on them in a moment. But the stranger does say, quote, there must be some evil on this land confusing our path. That reminds me of Aragorn's line about Rohan in the Two Towers film when they're running after Merry and Pippin, and I'm going to paraphrase it here, but he says something along the lines of, some evil gives speed to these creatures. I see an echo here from the stranger and Aragorn. And I do enjoy hearing more words from the wizard, more than just the grunts and the one word and stuff. I just said the wizard. So I'm doing this unconsciously, but the stranger is becoming the wizard in my mind. And yes, what the wizard here says is true. They were given a veil of forgetfulness after they were sent out from Valinor. He does realize that, yes, his home is just beyond the sunset in the far, far west of Valinor, the Undying Lands. All right, cut back to Halbrand. He's in chains. Obviously, Adar did not let his people go. He's got a wolf down there in prison with him. Is it sort of like a wolf or a warg or some sort of a werewolf type creature? In any case, he uses black speech to tame this wolf and to dominate over this particular wolf. So I want to read you this line from the Silmarillion. Quote, Sauron was become now a sorcerer of dreadful power, master of shadows and of phantoms, foul in wisdom, cruel in strength, misshaping what he touched, twisting what he ruled, lord of werewolves. His dominion was torment. So there's a really strong connection between Sauron and wolves, and I really do love how they portrayed this visually with Sauron using Halbrand / Sauron using black speech to tame the wolf. And fun fact, when Sauron would attack Minas Tirith, the White City, in the Third Age of Middle-earth, that great battle that you see in The Return of the King, he had prepared a very special battering ram called Grond. This battering ram was in the shape of a wolf. So more connections between Sauron and wolves there. Now we go back to Elrond. Where is he? He is at the Grey Havens. Now, you've seen this land before if you've seen the Return of the King film. This is that little area where Frodo and Bilbo will get on the ship and leave Middle-earth. This land was established in year one of the Second Age, and it is led by Círdan, who has a beard. Wait, I thought elves didn't have beards, so why does Círdan have one?
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read the Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the First Age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide. Because only elves who have lived a very long time even have the ability to grow beards, Círdan is the oldest elf in Middle-earth, and has been in Middle-earth since the very first days of the First Age. He's even older than Galadriel. There's even speculation that he was among the very first elves who woke in their homeland of Quivienen many, many, many years ago. So go listen to episode number 3 for that tale, ringspodcast.com/3. Just the number 3, not spelled out, if you want to hear a little bit of how the elves first woke up and what their origins are. I'm struggling with this setup of Elrond and the Three Rings here, because it's Elrond who will inform us in the Fellowship of the Ring that the Three Rings were not made by Sauron's hand. And yet, here we're supposed to believe that Elrond himself believes that Sauron did influence the Three, and it's only Círdan's perspective that convinces him otherwise? It just seems like a deviation of Elrond's character here. And given the character motivations from Season 1 and what we know of the characters in The Lord of the Rings, it makes more sense to me for Galadriel to be the one who hesitates to let the elves use the rings, as she is the most distrustful of Halbrand and Sauron, and for Elrond to be trying to urge her to hand them over, as Elrond is on the side of saving the elves from fading. So it just seems like a little bit of a character mismatch and role here. Plus, these three rings are already causing conflict among the elves. In my understanding of the Three Rings, they never created any sort of covetous conflict among the elves. They were not made for power or domination, as Elrond tells us in the Council of Elrond in the Fellowship of the Ring book. Quote, they were not made as weapons of war or conquest. That is not their power. Those who made them did not desire strength or domination or hoarded wealth, but understanding, making, and healing to preserve all things unstained. So far, in this conversation between Elrond and Círdan, the Three Rings have not led to understanding and healing, but rather are being treated as if they were the One Ring itself, which obviously hasn't been crafted yet. However, there is a callback to Peter Jackson's movies, where Elrond insists on the destruction of the rings, whether they be the One Ring or these Three Rings. There is also a Manwë reference there. Círdan references Manwë. Manwë was the High King of the Valar. Well, great, who are the Valar? The Valar are the powers that govern Middle-earth, are sort of like the demigods, if you will, under the one god, creator god, Ilúvatar, and they live out there in the far west of Valinor, the Undying Lands. And Manwë is their king. Círdan also references a great rift, a great trench in the ocean, and that there was a great battle where continents were shaken. This would be the continent of Beleriand, that was the main area of conflict for the first age of Middle-earth. That whole continent was sunk into the sea after the great battles that sort of finished off the first age of Middle-earth, and that's what Círdan is referencing there. Now, as Galadriel and Gil-galad show up, the light of the lighthouse is revolving. That reminds me a lot of the light of Sauron's eye in the Return of the King movie. It's like this roving light, trying to search out the ring. And then we do start to see that Galadriel is indeed becoming more humble and seeking resolution from conflict as she seeks for Elrond's help. And another callback line to the Peter Jackson movies, Elrond says to Galadriel, "What time do you think you have?" This echoes in my mind to what Saruman has to say to Gandalf right before Saruman reveals his betrayal to Gandalf and his allegiance with Sauron. He's saying, "Time, what time do you think you have?" I'm not sure if that's like an appropriate callback because Elrond is not actually betraying the elves here, but it's quickly followed by another echo, which is Galadriel says, "Where are the rings?" Which reminds me of Aragorn at the end of the Fellowship movie right before Frodo leaves, and he says, "Where is the ring?" Callbacks aside, let's go back to the stranger and Nori, and they have a whole sequence about this wandering day. First, they're reunited with Poppy, who brings them some food and some knowledge, and they learn that the lyrics of the This Wandering Day song, the walking song as they call it, are actually a map. This song still moves something deep within me, and I explained that back in episode number 43. You can find that at ringspodcast.com/43. So yes, I actually really loved this sequence, and I'm going to tell myself a story that the showrunners found my review of the lyrics back in episode 43, and they wanted to correct my understanding. I made a really strong case that the lyrics to that song map almost exactly to the journey made by Galadriel, and by extension nearly all the Noldor elves, as they left Valinor in the First Age. It's almost as if the showrunners listened to my episode and then wrote this whole scene just to say, "No, it's not Galadriel, it's a Harfoot song." Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, who knows. Another interesting thing here is the idea of Harfoots, or hobbits, closely examining maps, figuring out the riddles and finding paths that take them from the western lands they know and are comfortable in to the eastern lands that they know little about, and certainly into dangers and perils unknown. Does that sound familiar to another hobbit you know? However, they are again spied out by the Freymen in the stillsuit. Oh, I mean, the sand people with the bantha stick. Ah, shoot, I keep getting mixed up. The Forge Master of the Mandalorians. Okay, I'll stop. The figure with the bronze mask. Not sure who these folks are yet, but notice the white eye emblem that is in the same shape as the red eye emblem used by Sauron in the Peter Jackson films. Or as my children also pointed out, the Yiga clan from The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. And kudos to you if you followed each of the four or five different popular cultural references I just made. From the far east, we go back over to the far west. Círdan is sailing out into the water. But right before Moana is about to drop the Heart of the Ocean back into the water... Oh darn, wrong movie again, hold on. Ah yes, Círdan is about to drop the three rings into the water. But a wave hits the boat. Let's make a quick lore connection here. There is a member of the Valar who is over the waters, Olmo. We find in the Silmarillion that Olmo, quote, never abandoned the elves to their fate. He alone of the Valar continued to look after and help the elves, at least a lot more directly and frequently than others in the Valar. So, good use of lore with the wave rocking the boats that the rings aren't abandoned in the waters. We swing back to Adar, who is talking with Sauron, as Sauron has been imprisoned. He shares some details about the origin story of orcs. Now, the origin of orcs is not exactly cut and dry. There's some conflicting evidence if you look at all of Tolkien's writings. The story, as it goes in the Silmarillion, is that the Morgoth captured and tortured elves to the point where he was able to craft his own race of corrupted beings, those being the orcs. If you want to dig deeper into that origin story, you can go listen to episode number 59, ringspodcast.com/59, to hear about the origin of the orcs as it's told in the Silmarillion. And here, Adar makes it sound like Morgoth recruited a specific number of elves with promises of power, probably glory, etc. But all they had to do was essentially be tortured by thirst and hunger. And Sauron sounds almost like a Christ-like savior figure to Adar. He's got a beautiful face, he's the Lord's servant, he's offering wine to the captured, which I'm not exactly thrilled about the idea of Sauron or Halbrand being sort of like a savior or, you know, something like that. That just doesn't really jive with me. In any case, Adar forces Halbrand to swear allegiance, but in the most humiliating way possible, with his head at Adar's feet. But listen carefully, because Halbrand doesn't swear to serve Adar specifically, rather he will serve, quote, the Lord of Mordor. Adar thinks that that means him, but Halbrand is double-speaking again. He is only swearing to serve himself, as he sees himself as the Lord of Mordor. So this double-speaking vow reminds me of Gollum's promise to Frodo in Emon Muil, to serve the Master of the Precious, which Frodo feels is good enough to trust Gollum. However, Frodo is not the master of the One Ring. Sauron is. Gollum and Sauron are tricksters in the long tradition of clever tricksters. You cannot trust what they say. Back to Lindon we go for the climax of this episode. Gil-galad's song, I find it really powerful, and I'll admit it brings some tears to my eyes. I don't want the elves to pass into the West. I want them to stay in Middle-earth. But at the last moment, Círdan returns and advocates for the use of the three rings. He's already claimed one of them. Interesting enough, I think the rings almost choose their own bearers rather than the bearer choosing the ring. Nenya, the white ring, falls at Galadriel's feet. Darkness falls to light, and the great tree of Lindon is restored. This really was a beautiful and striking scene, and it resolves the primary conflict of Season 1. The elves have been preserved. Hooray! And as the three ring bearers converge, note again the musical cue. The musical theme of the ring verse from Season 1 is overlaid over the scene of these three rings coming together. Now, the episode could have ended right here, on a literally high light. The tree is golden and glowing, the elves have taken up the rings, emotions are at a high point. But we have one more sequence. Why? Because this season is not about the light. It is about the darkness. Season 2 explores the machinations of Sauron, his deceits and manipulations, so the showrunners turn our attention once more to Halbrand. Halbrand, having left chaos in his wake in the Southlands, returns all the way back to Eregion, where he attempts to gain an audience with Celebrimbor. Halbrand's message to Celebrimbor is the same he had for Adar. He wants to negotiate. This episode closes with the crucial question of Season 2. Should Celebrimbor grant entry to Halbrand? Celebrimbor doesn't understand the full stakes, and at this point he's only suspicious of Halbrand. Remember, Galadriel hadn't said outright that Halbrand was Sauron until she met with Gil-galad earlier in this episode. So Celebrimbor doesn't know. And neither does he provide an answer. Will Celebrimbor invite Halbrand back in? Even if he doesn't know, you and I, as viewers, do. This isn't simply a choice to be hospitable or not. Celebrimbor's choice is whether to give entry to darkness. What will he choose? Alright, let's get to overall scoring for this episode. I'm going to break this down and give a score on 6 different elements: story, characters, dialogue, visuals, music, and the most important, lore faithfulness. For each element, I will give between 1 and 5 wizard staffs. They're really just points or stars, but wizard staffs sounds cooler. 5 being the best, just perfection, and 1 wizard staff just being a betrayal of all your mission and friends, aka Saruman. Story involves the main conflict, the subplots, and overall narrative. I'm giving this episode a 4. Maybe a little surprising, and I could be convinced to go down to a 3. Characters involves their motivations, decisions, and actions. This episode gets a 3. Too many things that just don't make sense here in this episode. Dialogue. What do the characters actually say to each other? No surprise here. I'm giving it a 2. I just think too many lines were lazy and broke the enchantment, and when ChatGPT can come up with a better line than you can, I think not a lot of credit due. Visuals. 5. I think they were just fantastic. Fantastic storytelling through visual, although I could do with a little less gore. That's just me. Music. 5. Absolutely spot on here. But here's the real kicker. Lore. Faithfulness. I would go with a 1, but there were a few positive and subtle things that pulled this up to a 2 for me. Alright, so that brings this episode to an overall average of 3.5 for me. But I want to hear from you. Do you disagree? Let me know. Do you score it higher or lower? And I want to hear why. Send me a DM on Instagram or Twitter, or use the contact form at ringspodcast.com to send me your thoughts. Also, what questions do you have from this episode? Like, who are the Fremen? I mean the spy people in the desert. Send in your questions and I will answer them here on the show. Okay, one last reminder. I will be reviewing each episode of Rings of Power over the next couple of weeks. Since those come out on Thursday nights, and my usual new episode also comes out on Thursday, I'm going to temporarily shift new episode release days. So watch Rings of Power on Thursday nights, then tune in on Friday for my reviews of each episode. And make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss out. And as always, thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.